having difficulty. I know Hilda said she had a difficult time getting in to the site. Is anybody else having that difficulty, or can everybody see the slides?
I had a little bit of difficulty getting in. This is Linda Todd, but I'm in now.
I see you there. Okay, great. All right, well then let's begin. You know, theoretically, it would have been nice if I could have given you this wonderful presentation this morning about exactly how billing and reimbursement happens in the VA. But the truth of the matter is that is really part and parcel of what this project is going to focus on. And that's going to be looking at our current practices and seeing if they are similar from facility to facility, and really trying to dig down within the VA and looking at how we address reimbursement, because it's set up similarly in all of our facilities, but it's not exact. And that's kind of the sad but true part. So I might end up at the end of this presentation having more questions for you than answers, but that's okay, because that's where we can begin. So the vision for the Veterans Health Administration really is reliable access to quality palliative care for all veterans. And that really is what we're looking for, is how do we help veterans access the care that they need, whether that be in their community or within their local VA healthcare center. I thought it would be good for us just to just delineate, especially with Lakewood having their project be specifically on palliative care and the transition to hospice care, that we take a look at the definitions. This is the AAHPM definition. The VA itself doesn't have a specific definition, but it's important to note that everywhere in the VA, that hospice and palliative care, that word is almost one word, hospice and palliative care. So the principles, the directives, the handbook definitely have those two words married. There is, in the minutia of some of the reimbursement, definite distinctions in that they will distinguish hospice care as reimbursable rather than palliative care. So that's where things get a little muddy. So we want to just distinguish palliative care from hospice care. And again, we're looking at palliative care focusing on pain, other distressing symptoms, which could be emotional, spiritual, and psychological, as well as physical. And we're looking at palliative care being offered amongst other treatments. So no specific treatment is excluded in palliative care. Hospice care is more focused on the last half year of a person's life. I will let you know that the VA has similar, although not exact, criteria for non-cancer diagnoses for admission into hospice care. But again, when we have to work with community hospices, we recognize that we need to speak very close to the same language. Hospice care can be provided either within the VA, so in the VA's four walls, either in the inpatient acute care, ICU, or the nursing home setting. Long-term care facilities, again, the VA has its own nursing homes on campus, but then we also have contracts with community nursing homes, and that's where community hospices play a part in providing that care. And then, of course, in the community, which, again, we rely totally on community hospice to provide that particular hospice care. Again, here's my slide. I wish I could tell you that there's just this nice and neat process, but that, again, is part of what we are going to accomplish on this journey, is we are going to map out how reimbursement occurs, and if there's going to be any particular issues that rise up along the way, I need to explain to you that the VA, much like any other larger organization, has different offices. So the payment for hospice services comes out of, for the most part, the fee basis office. So the fee basis office is the one that processes the codes that the community health nurses enter, and they process the purpose of visit codes, billing codes, all of those things. If the fee basis staff misunderstand the community health nurses' notations and don't align their information with what the community health nurse intended, then it is possible for the hospice to still receive payment, but for the VA to have that payment recorded in some odd column rather than the one we expect. So we're really working internally. Our understanding is there was a software upgrade about a year ago that really kind of threw a wrench into how the fee basis staff processed all the home health claims. And so what we're trying to do is work through and speak the same language. Palliative care is listed in the medical benefits package married with the word hospice, so it says hospice and palliative care. But what was really surprising to me, coming from private sector, from community hospice, I was employed again as a hospice nurse in a freestanding community-based hospice and worked there for about 20 years in all different capacities. I will let you know that my more recent capacity within hospice was working in general inpatient care, specifically looking at the billing and justification of inpatient care, whether or not a hospitalization was related or unrelated to the terminal illness, looking at continuous care criteria, assisting with documentation for crisis, for symptom management, and justification again for those levels of care. So that's kind of my background and the focus areas. I also was responsible for contracting with area hospitals and nursing homes. So approached this from both a contractual aspect as well as a more practical day-to-day aspect. So staff would call either the medical director or myself up if they had, let's say they had somebody that fell at home on hospice and they were our hospice patient for, let's say, pancreatic cancer, fell and broke their hip. Is that related or unrelated? And my job would be then to look into, were there any bone mets? What were the circumstances surrounding the fall? Those sorts of things, and then determining if that hip fracture should be considered part of the pancreatic cancer and the hospice to pay for that therapy or whatever repair was going to be needed, or if that could be turfed back to Medicare or private insurance. So it's frustrating to me coming and looking at a benefits package when I can't put my finger on, there says they cover palliative care, but there's no guidance. Nowhere can I find any guidance for palliative care. So when I discuss this with staff, there are pockets in our VISN 23 facilities of staff that are offering and paying for palliative care, but in essence, they have to make it fit under other home care criteria. And so part of really what we want to look at, especially with Lakewood, is how does that work? What can we do to refine the system? And are we still having areas where, you know, we have facilities that are approached about palliative care who say, oh, no, that's not in the benefits. We can't do that. Again, we want to make certain that we can paint this as an option for those around the country. So we're looking at that payment mechanism and again, trying to make it more recognizable. This is our VA paid hospice care average daily census, and this was fiscal 11. So this isn't so great. This is VA paid hospice is something that was strongly encouraged within hospice and palliative care. Every VISN was encouraged to have an average daily census of 45. And we really thought that we could achieve that because past years, our average daily census had been around 30. But we really struggled in fiscal 11. And you can see, if you look along the bottom, VISN 23 was actually one of the lower facilities. And had higher numbers in fiscal 10 than they did in fiscal 11. Now, this is just the first quarter of fiscal 11, and I'm happy to say that VISN 23 ended up higher, but we didn't quite achieve. We actually ended at 40. We didn't achieve that 45. October 1st, which is the beginning of our new fiscal year, we actually hit 53, and we've been in the 50s every month since then. So that's actually really encouraging to us. Now, people may ask, what's the difference between VA paid hospice, Medicare, and Medicaid? Well, every veteran has a choice as to what benefits they'd like to use at the VA. So you may have heard in the past that people would say, well, if you have Medicare, you have to use that first because that's your primary payer. And that just isn't the case. Even if the veteran has multiple insurances, as a veteran, they still have a right to use their veteran benefit. So they do have the right to use VA paid hospice. VA paid hospice is very, very closely fashioned to the hospice Medicare benefit. Again, it's arrangement where approval is obtained through the community health nurse, and then payment is received through fee basis, and the hospice needs to establish billing practices with. So this is particularly what we are talking about when we're talking about reimbursement, is actual hospice care that the VA is going to pay for. So we're going to have many other patients that we have relationships with that are getting their care paid for through Medicare, Medicaid, or another third-party payer. But we need to be clear that it's not a requirement. Just last week, I had a staff person call me up and say, okay, I just want to be certain. A hospice is telling me that their veteran has Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And because they have that, they have to use their Blue Cross Blue Shield rather than their VA paid hospice benefits. And this staff person was savvy enough to believe that that was not the case, but she just wanted to double check to make sure there weren't some unforeseen circumstances that she wasn't thinking of. But I reiterated again that this veteran does have that option. He can either use his Blue Cross Blue Shield or he can use VA paid hospice care. So again, this is a fairly new concept, not only in VISN 23, but across the country. I would say in VISN 23, we've had about a year's worth of practice in understanding how this works. We still have a ways to go. So we want to make certain that our partners in care in the community hospices are aware of what they can offer and ask for when they call the VA. And then we want to make certain that our VA staff are giving the same message and giving the same direction to the hospices when they're contacted as well. So the VA paid hospice care, who usually is in that average daily census, that ADC. I'll be really honest and tell you that most Medicare patients go with their Medicare hospice benefit, and really, that's just fine. There really isn't any reason not to. So there really isn't an advantage from either the VA side or from the hospice side, except for your billing might be a little slicker. Nonetheless, your staff in hospice have to be careful that they don't tell a veteran that they must use their Medicare benefit. Again, it has to be presented as a choice, and that was made really clear to us by a member of a central office about a year ago. There is an identified payment mechanism for VA-paid hospice, but it was located in five different directives and handbooks and illustrative letters. And so it was really, really confusing. So some people would look at it, and again, they would use terms like when veterans were receiving hospice care, even routine home care in a nursing home. In the directives and handbooks, they started calling that inpatient care. And then they would mix that with general inpatient care, and it really is quite confusing. Payment must be made following LUPA rates. I will have you know we only received the LUPA rates last week for fiscal 12, and that was a little bit of an oops on VA Central Office's part because we received the home care rates back in late December, early January. And we kept asking about the hospice rates, and so a little bit of a delay there. We can't start paying your fiscal 12 hospice rates. So, knowing that you get an annual adjustment, we can't pay that until those rates are converted into LUPA rates. The LUPA rates are basically a conversion of Medicare rates into a VA payment mechanism. And so we can now start paying your fiscal 12 rates, which, again, if this occurs again in the future, I think we just need to start asking sooner. Usually it's right around December, January where the LUPA rates are converted. And so again, it's a little bit of a pity that we're already in March and we just received them. Again, there's the consolidation of directives, handbooks, and an illustrative letter. Part of my project for my master's degree in nursing was to develop a draft VISN 23 directive on community hospice services. Things move a little slowly in the VA, so it's still in draft form, but it is actually a document that is fairly well utilized. And it really walks through the basics of hospice care, much like the CMS guidelines do, because of course that's what I knew best. So what I want to show you is something that you're probably not going to say, "Oh, this is great. I've never heard of this before." Rather, you'll say, "Yeah, this is familiar." But what I want you to know is this is what we've taught our community health nurses, and this was brand new to them. So please be patient as they maybe haven't had VA paid hospice. Maybe they haven't had anybody on that for 4 months. And so they're going back into it again and becoming familiar with it. For Medicare, your staff doesn't dial up your Medicare intermediary with every patient level of care change that you have or every admission that you have. You have your automated billing. You trust that you're doing the right thing. You get audited. You find out if you didn't do the right thing. But that's not how the VA works, even though we're both federal payment systems. And so what I've coached the community health nurses to think of this as is explaining to hospices is this is like private insurance. This is like calling Aetna or Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is like talking to a case manager and basically giving an update on the patient and asking for a level of care change. And that might seem a little bit more cumbersome, but that is actually how the system is set up. If you don't do that and you bypass those steps, you'll probably just get paid routine home care because the community health nurses are responsible for entering the proper codes for payment. And so it's really, really important that we establish close communication between each other so that we can get the right dollars in your pockets. So the little bit of an algorithm is the veteran wants VA paid hospice care. And in the case that I was talking to you about, the veteran actually wanted to use VA paid hospice. One of the advantages to him versus using his Blue Cross Blue Shield is in the VA, he didn't have a copay for his hospice care, while in Blue Cross, he did. So that was one of the monetary advantages that he experienced. So let's say that this hospice agency moved forward, and instead of Blue Cross Blue Shield for his hospice, he was now going to be under VA paid. So the mechanism would be that that hospice nurse, whoever you have at your agency, who does like the pre-op calls for private insurance, would call the case manager at your local VA. And the way to find out who that magic person is to use the contact information that we gave you at the beginning of this project. For many of you, that contact person is the person who will be doing those authorizations. Some of you, though, it'll be a different person. And then upon admission, just like Medicare and every other payer source that you're using, we need to know which level of care is most appropriate from the get-go. We are going to guess that the majority are going to be routine home care, but we also know that the other levels of care sometimes come into play as soon as you guys walk in the door to do the admit. So in routine home care, of course, you guys know better than anyone, this is the usual level of care. And again, what's confusing in the VA directives and handbooks is they start mixing that nursing home language and calling it inpatient, and then people started paying at the inpatient rate. And so, again, we needed to clarify the usual level of care when veterans are either in a nursing home setting or an assisted living setting, at the beginning at least, the usual level of care is routine home care. And again, medications related to the terminal illness should be paid for by the hospice. So what we want to set up with the hospice agency, those LUPA rates mirror your Medicare locality pay rates. So they're adjusted for rural and urban. They're adjusted by county. And so what we want to do is pay you per diem rates. And again, that's going to look an awful lot like your Medicare rates. It's going to be pretty much identical now that we can catch up and start paying fiscal 12 rates. So whatever is in your Medicare benefits package should be in your VA benefits package. Again, both federal entities should be exact in terms of, we're not a private insurance where you can negotiate additional pieces into the routine home care. It just doesn't work that way. So we expect medications related to the terminal illness be provided by the hospice. Now, that's different than how some VAs have operated in the past. Some VAs have operated in the past where they pay the hospice a consultant fee, and then the VA pays for all the medicines. Well, that's really confusing. It also isn't particularly fair to the hospices, especially if they're going to be providing on-call coverage. And so what we're encouraging is hospices to enroll these veterans fully, consider them just like they would any other hospice patient under their care, and then to treat them as if they were a Medicare hospice patient receiving per diem. So equipments, medications, supplies related to the terminal illness would be covered by the hospice under that arrangement. The hospice plan of care. Make no mistake, you guys are in charge of the plan of care. But the VA physician has to authorize that hospice care is appropriate and has to certify that hospice care is appropriate. So it really is a collaborative relationship. And so we really are interested in being kept up and being kept abreast of the plan of care and any changes that would be happening. It's really, really important that from the very beginning you clarify whether or not the VA physician is going to remain the primary physician for hospice care. Lots of confusion regarding that. Sometimes these VA docs are signing on to they don't know what. And then they go, how come the hospice keeps calling me for orders? I already sent that patient to hospice. Why are they calling me? Well, buddy, because you signed up as a primary physician. And so, again, it's really important from a hospice aspect that you outline what's expected from a primary physician. The VA is very, 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 very clear in its guidelines that it really is not equipped to provide 24/7 coverage, meaning that if you have a VA physician as the primary physician of record for that patient, that the hospice is strongly encouraged to negotiate with their medical director coverage of after hours and weekends. And the reason why is just because the VA is not set up to accommodate the 24/7 coverage yet. That day will come, but we aren't quite there yet. So the medical officers of the day, MODs as they're called, come from all walks of life. Some of them are VA employees, and some of them are merely contracted by the VA for a week's worth at a time. So to try to get all of those medical officers of the day trained and familiar with home hospice care and appropriate symptom management is rather daunting. And so again, we know that task is set before us, but we're not quite there yet, and we just really ask for the hospice's understanding in that. The hospice requires certification of terminal illness from a VA provider. In the past, that was required by a face-to-face visit, and that actually within this past year has been changed to a chart review. And so let's say you've got a veteran who has not been seen by the VA before, and he needs hospice care and really could benefit from VA-paid hospice care. The mechanism would be to pick up the phone and call the community health nurse, explain the situation, and then explain that you would really be interested in getting this veteran enrolled very quickly or catastrophically enrolled, and that your veteran needs hospice care immediately. So there's a whole lot of things that need to take place on the VA side, one of them being that the VA has to certify that this veteran is terminally ill. To do that, we request the faxing of records that you have that leads you to believe that that veteran is terminally ill. And through record review, our VA physicians have been instructed that they can then proceed with this process. So that's a huge change and avoids sending actively dying patients on gurneys to the VA so that the VA physician can say, yes, they're dying, and then sending them back home, which is just so silly. So again, we're looking at pretty much basic things. Respite care is going to be paid for through the hospice benefit. And it's going to basically be at whatever location you have your respite contract at. No different. 5 days of respite care intermittently will follow the Medicare language and not stipulate 5 consecutive days every 30 days is the absolute maximum that a veteran could utilize under his hospice benefit. But you need to know that under that medical benefits package, that veteran also has a respite package. Now, that veteran might have already used up all of their respite care prior to coming to hospice, but they may not have ever touched it. So that's another option. And that respite care can be offered either in the VA's community living center or the VA nursing home on the VA grounds, or there are situations in which the VA can arrange for a caregiver to go out intermittently into the home. I don't know that it's ever happened or that it's even allowed that that caregiver can come into the home 24/7, meaning if the wife wants to go down south to see her granddaughter, then the inpatient, just like in hospice care, unfortunately, the inpatient respite is usually the option for when caregivers, have surgery or leave town. Again, if that benefit wants to be used, that does need to be arranged through the community health nurse, and again, LUPA rates will be paid for that. General inpatient care. First and foremost, the VA is the first place where we would ask that that veteran seek general inpatient care. And that's because we have hospice and palliative care teams at all of our facilities. Now, we understand that distance does play a factor, and sometimes it's just not practical to get the veteran all the way to the VA. And so in those circumstances, we would look at authorizing general inpatient care through the community health nurse. Now, I don't know how it works with your private insurances, but when I was talking with private insurances a few years back, it was pretty usual to get 1 to 2 days of authorized inpatient care with the instruction that you call with a report to get any further authorizations. And that's really what we're encouraging occur between the hospices and the community health nurses. So again, give a call, give an update, and then we've been helping coach the community health nurses as far as the authorization that they can extend. So it should really be daily, that we're giving a daily authorization, and it's going to be paid for at that flat LUPA rate, no negotiating if that person gets, radiation treatments during the days that they were inpatient and you didn't realize that. We don't have any way to pay above that general inpatient LUPA rate, kind of with Medicare. So again, we just look at you guys as being the managers of that care. Again, general inpatient care is going to fall under the same criteria. It's going to be short term, days to possibly a week, extenuating circumstances of symptom management or impending death with symptoms might make that longer. But again, that'd be day-to-day determination. And again, we're really looking at something active happening, not people just sitting there waiting for, again, a spouse to come and take them home. We want to make certain that those are actually justifiable inpatient days. Continuous care. I don't know how many of you offer continuous care. I would hope that you all would. It's under the Medicare guidelines as a required level of care, and we recognize that in the VA as a required level of care. This is also where we need to work very closely together, because what we want to do is reimburse the hospice fairly, but also we want to make certain that the hospice has good coverage in place for the veteran in the home or in the nursing home. So again, we're looking at symptom management as really the driver, complex care, emergent care, and what we're looking at is the hourly rate with a minimum of 8 hours, and at least 8 hours should be staffed and considered general inpatient care for that level of care to be paid. Otherwise, it would be routine home care being paid for that day. Again, we're really looking at day-to-day authorizations. Catastrophic enrollment. You need to understand that the community health nurses play a huge role in catastrophic enrollment. We actually had a partnership call for the state of Minnesota a couple weeks ago, and somebody brought up a really great question. What can we as hospices do to expedite this process? And it was really nice to hear that question, because there are a few things that can be done by hospice staff that can help us with the documentation for catastrophic enrollment, such as documenting their level of ADLs. There are certain pieces of basic information that the social workers oftentimes can gather. There is asking if that veteran has their DD-214, and if they don't, we get busy trying to find it for them. Bottom line is, these community health nurses oftentimes walk this information to the enrollment office, and then after it's been blessed by the enrollment office, these community health nurses are oftentimes walking that information to the chief of staff's office. So the chief of staff or the physician in charge of the medical facility actually has to sign the form that authorizes catastrophic enrollment. So if you can imagine all of those pieces in play behind the scenes, and if you know that the VA works kind of, it's a huge system, many working parts, but feels sometimes things work so very slow. Enrollment normally is a 2 to 3 week process. And so our goal is to make it a less than 24-hour process, and that's hurrying up a lot of people. So please help us in that process as much as you can, and then understand what goes on behind the scenes as we're trying to work as quickly as we can to try to get those benefits available to the veteran. Again, the community hospice nurses are really key to making this go around, but so are the hospice and palliative care nurse coordinators. Those people are very, very knowledgeable about community hospice services. Many of them have been community hospice nurses in the past, so they have a working knowledge. But we always offer that if you feel like you've hit the wall and you've gotten an answer that just does not make sense to you, that you can certainly contact Dr. Ramirez or myself as a second opinion, asking, you know, is this really how it is? Sometimes there's misunderstandings along the way, and we make clarifications with staff. Other times there's clarifications that we can make in VA policy that help people understand. I'll give an example. Pardon me, my voice is going today. One example is a community hospice, and the director actually contacted me several times. The first was that they had contacted the community health nurse at their facility, and this was a veteran that lived 70 miles away from the local VA and required general inpatient care. When they called the community health nurse at the VA, the answer they received is, I'm sorry, we won't pay for that. The veteran will have to come here to the VA to receive inpatient care. So very rightly so, that director called me up, and we were very quickly able to get that resolved and explain, no, this is general inpatient care. Because of the distance, it's very, very understandable, and it should be reimbursed based on a daily authorization. That same director called me a couple months later because he had heard that the VA was paying for inpatient care at hospice houses in a few select instances. Their hospice house was 10 miles away from the VA, and they were requesting that the veteran be able to be at the hospice house and receive general inpatient care. Because of the distance of the hospice house to the VA, I needed to explain to the director that it's very clear in the handbooks and the directives that the first choice for inpatient care is the VA. Now, if the VA had no beds and they were diverting patients, that would be a natural place to divert to, but this institution had beds, and they had that availability, and they had a hospice physician standing there waiting. And so, again, that was those instances where they just wanted to be sure of the answer they were receiving, and that's okay. We don't mind making those clarifications and would welcome that. The rest of this is just basically the same information, but you need to understand that in the VA, contract nursing home is a different program. Contract nursing homes are the nursing homes in the community that the VA can place veterans. Now, sometimes hospices say, oh, I wish I could get a contract with the VA. That would be so great. Well, first off, the VA does not allow us to contract with hospices at this point in time. We're in a moratorium and we cannot contract. So we can have basically a working agreement with one another, and the VA can pay hospice through fee basis. There are some places, and there might be some of you on this call, who are working under a contract with a VA, and that's because your contract was in existence prior to the moratorium being placed. And so we are going to be operating with sometimes slightly different terminology, but the fact of the matter is, even if you have a contract with a hospice, that does not mean that the VA sends all of their hospice business to the contracted hospice. The VA still is responsible for making all community hospice agency services available to that veteran and allowing the veteran to choose. So at this point in time, there isn't an advantage to contracting, and again, that continues to be worked out at the national level. Again, there's just further instruction on how to code this, because it's coded, of course, differently in the nursing home than it would be at a private home. And then hospice veteran partnerships, again, we just can't stress enough how important those are, how we learn from one another, and how individuals who have successfully partnered with the VA can be so instrumental in helping other hospice agencies understand how very complex and bizarre sometimes the VA really is. The thing about fee basis, and part of the conversation that I think I want to have with you, although I'm obviously talking too much here, is that they request that patients not be batch billed, but that they be billed individually. We were having that difficulty with some hospice agencies. So I would like to open this up to finding out from all of you how reimbursement has gone between your agency and the VA.
Well, this is Joe with Regional Hospice.
And hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing? We have always had just great success with the VA. And we've had a contract in place with the Minneapolis VA for years. And, you know, we have it set up electronically direct deposit. And so the reimbursement from the VA goes directly into our account. And but we haven't had any challenges with getting things paid for and stuff. And it was interesting that you said that now the VA will not pay, you know, an addition for anything. Because I remember past instances, this was, you know, probably several years ago, where we would have a patient with very costly medications or needed some additional, you know, personal care or something. And there was a couple occasions where we were able to work out some extra funding through the VA. And it sounds like that will no longer be an option. Because, you know, Medicare is Medicare. The guidelines, there's no deviation from that, where private insurance companies sometimes, you know, they are willing to deviate from the norm.
Right, right. And, you know, the best we can do, Joe, is follow the direction that we receive from the top. And some of that direction is clarification that we've received over the last year or two. So, we'll look at continuing to work side by side with you. Have you used the different levels of care within the VA paid hospice care?
Well, we do offer continuous care, but we have not used that option for any veterans. Mainly been routine home care. I know we've had it's been a while, but I know we've built inpatient care before, and you know, and for us it's 2.5 hours to the nearest VA hospital, so it's always been really easy to make that call and say, you know, if it's okay, they're going to stay locally, and that's never been an issue.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we've had really good success in billing the VA and getting paid and being able to work out any things that might be coming up. You know, the one question I have, and I got on the call a little late and I'm going to miss this, is with contracted nursing homes, if, you know, some of our areas don't have a contracted nursing home, or if they do, that nursing home might be full, there's not a bed available. If a veteran needs nursing home placement, is there a way to get like a one-time approval for that patient to get nursing home care, or, you know, is that a possibility? You know,
I think that's worth looking at.
Okay.
That question's been brought up before. We've looked in the regulations. I need to bring that up further, but, you know, I think we need to take a look at whether or not that's possible or not.
Okay. That's the situation we run into more often than not, is, you know, the nursing homes around here are very small. They've all reduced down to 50 beds.
Yep.
And if a veteran does need nursing home placements, a lot of times they have a waiting list. But the facility that doesn't have a VA contract has beds. And so it'd just be nice to know if there's a way we can make it happen on a individual basis.
Sure, sure. We'll check on that.
All right, great.
Anybody else willing to share?
Well, this is, excuse me, this is Joni from Hospice Southwest Iowa. And Carolyn, I have a question for you. Often when we get a referral from the VA, from our referral nurse or from the hospice referral nurse, she states that that the hospice benefit or the veteran will be using Medicare hospice. I can't remember, you know, maybe one case where we used veteran, you know, or VA benefits.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if you can speak to, you know, since you said it was a veteran's choice to use that benefit, are there some guidelines? Do they have to have a certain amount of disability in order to qualify for the hospice VA benefit?
No, but that is a particular facility where we have been working on making certain that that choice is being offered. And so that nurse who's calling with the referral should have already extended that offer to the veteran and asked, you know, what they preferred. And that could happen either at the level of the hospice and palliative care team and their interactions with the veteran, or it could be the referral nurse herself, you know, having a conversation with that veteran. But it should be a choice, and we continue to reiterate that that is their choice. Again, to the veteran, there really isn't a difference. It's just a matter of principle. It's a matter of, you know, saying you have a choice. Rather than dictating you must use this particular payer. But it's one of those things that came to light because actually there were many, many veterans under the age of 65. They had no Medicare. They had no Medicaid. They had no private insurance. And what we're finding is hospices were battling with the VA to get hospice care paid, so much so that the hospices were throwing up their hands and saying, fine, we'll just consider this a charity case, provide them hospice care, and we won't even bother trying to bill. And so it's been a huge issue within the VA. So the clarification has really, really emphasized on those without another payer source or those whose payer source causes them to have heavy co-payments. Such as those who are privately insured or might be very underinsured. And so we have also many cases of actually VA staff telling veterans that they needed to go apply for medical assistance to cover their hospice care. And that's not how this was intended. But you need to realize that these benefits are more of an evolution rather than a start date by which, you know, the flag was you know, waved and all of a sudden these benefits start. It's an evolution of understanding and a change in culture and practice for us.
So are you telling me that the person that we're dealing with probably should be more educated now about the veteran's ability to tap into those VA benefits for hospice?
The veteran should have already been offered that choice. And if they're not, just, you know, I'm open to feedback. That's what this project's about. If you don't feel that that veteran got that choice, we'd like to hear about it, because that helps us in this project to be able to clarify that process.
Okay, that's helpful, because I think we probably would have a few more questions for our referral source then. That's helpful.
Sure, that's fair. And if you want me involved in any of your discussions, you know, please, we can set up something. There's no problem with that.
That'd be great.
Carol, this is Joe again.
Yes.
I just had another question. When veterans, you know, they have a different level of benefits based on their service.
That's part of their additional benefits, not the general benefits package.
Yep.
But yes.
And so if they have benefits, everybody's eligible for hospice and palliative care.
Think of it like insurance.
Okay.
So, you know, if you pay the basic fee, you can get the basic package of insurance.
Okay.
And then if you pay more, you get, you know, the higher grade package. So these veterans all come into the VA, and they all get the basic package.
Okay.
And the basic package includes hospice and palliative care, home health benefits, respite benefits. Those are in the basic package. So the extras that you might see and hear veterans receiving, veterans who are, and you'll hear them called Mill Bill veterans. Mill Bill veterans are some of our very, very oldest veterans who came into the VA system, and the VA promised to care for them for the rest of their lives. And so they've come into the VA either to our CLC nursing homes or community nursing homes, and the VA will pay for their care, rain or shine, until the day that they die.
Okay.
Those veterans, of course, are becoming fewer and fewer. What we see a huge, huge resurgence in, though, is ALS. So if you have any veterans with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease,
mm-hmm.
and that they've not enrolled with the VA, they are missing out big time on benefits.
Sure.
There's a whole package, because they now recognize ALS as a service-connected disability. And that's huge.
That is.
So they get their ALS care covered, their hospice care covered, and some of them are able to qualify. Again, it depends on their service and those sorts of things, but some of them are qualifying for stipends that sometimes even go on for the caregiver after death. And so, I mean, you guys just come out looking so cool if you're able to connect the dots for your patients and get them more money and more benefits. I mean, you just end up looking so smart and so good. And so, again, there really isn't a reason not to. It's basic. To me, it's just basic knowing what's out there and knowing what you can knowledgeably offer. And before you offer the moon, it's always good if you just say, you know, I've heard that there might be benefits. Let's check and see. And that's the best way to kind of open up the conversation. But it's another reason for using that military history checklist. We had an example of a veteran elderly, dying pretty quickly, in need of hospice care, had never enrolled at the VA. So again, going through the catastrophic enrollment process, and he would have qualified for that, except for they found out that he'd won a Purple Heart. Well, unbeknownst to us, we're just learning this enrollment system as well, but that put him at the front of the line. He was like automatically enrolled. Like he was like considered an honorary VA member. And so there's things like that that who knew, the medals that some guy has in his drawer that, you know, whether they're humble or they just didn't think it mattered, you know, maybe it mattered back then, but it doesn't really matter now. Those are the sorts of things that you, in your work as hospice, you're privy to. And those are the people that we're really interested in reaching and helping. I actually talked really frankly with the fiscal and benefits people, and I said to them, you know, how is this going to look to the VA if we have a lot of dying veterans that are signing up for care under catastrophic enrollment? And, you know, is this going to be a burden on the system? Is this going to drain the system financially somehow, and somebody's going to come back to us and say, oh, my word, we have all of these catastrophically enrolled veterans? Well, at the time I asked that question, it just so happened that Central Office had put out a directive encouraging all VISNs to find catastrophically enrolled veterans and to get them enrolled. And so the timing just couldn't be better. So, again, I really encourage that. Anybody else?
Caroline, this is Sally Buck.
Yes.
I just had a question. When you were indicating that the LUPA payments, fees,
yes,
were just updated to fiscal year 12.
Yes.
So if our sites had patients, you know, paid at the fiscal year 11 rate prior to March, there isn't any retroactive payment adjustment, is there?
No, I wish there were.
Are there other questions for Caroline? Or experiences you've had to clarify? Okay. Well, we've got the rest of the time. Again, you know this, that we wanted to be sure we had a chance to share project updates. But first, I wanted to thank Caroline for putting together a really nice overview. And even, I think, for those of us not in the hospice payment world from the outside, you did a really nice job explaining the different mechanisms and for the different levels of care. So thank you, Caroline, for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And we will have a recording for all of you at the sites available. So if you need to share that with staff who weren't able to be on today or new staff at any time, that will be in our kind of library of resources.
Great.
So why don't we start with just some community updates, and I'll just start with Ashland, being the A. Joe?
Hello.
Hey.
Well, nothing super new from last call. We have our meeting on Friday with all the county veteran service officers and the clinic staff from three of the VA clinics in our area. And so we're really looking forward to that. We have 3 hours of time to present to them. And we're still working with Deborah Grassman to get her up for some community and staff presentations training. We're getting closer to getting our toolkit put together the DVD, the CDs, that's all been ordered now, and we're just reproducing a lot of the materials, and once we get those, we'll just spend a lot of time in all of our communities meeting with all the organizations that we have planned to meet with and educate them on what we're doing and how to use the toolkit and how to reach out with us. That's kind of where we're at right now. But I must say this call was very helpful. So thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Okay, and but Joni and Stacy.
Well, Erica's not here. She had to go home early because of a sick child. So I can give you just a little bit of an update. I know that she has been working on the manual, the volunteer training manual, and we're going through revisions on that as we speak. We've had our compliance officer look through it as well. So we're working really hard on that. Also, they attended a Veterans Health Fair up in Avoca on Friday and Saturday and had some really good contacts with people. And so we are still looking for our veteran volunteer champion. And we thought we had somebody identified, but we're still trying to look to see if that's the right person or not. And then we've written a job description for that person. And we're also looking at a contract to have that person available to assist us build our veteran-to-veteran volunteer program.
Great. Thank you, Joni, Stacy. And then why don't we go to Linda with the other vet-to-vet program at Hospice of Siouxland.
Hello. Melissa, are you on the call?
Yes, I am, Linda.
Okay. Do you want to update kind of what...
Sure, I can give them an update of what we're doing. We've worked with all of our current volunteers. We have almost 300 to identify which volunteers are veterans and which ones would be interested in participating in a little extra training to be a part of the program. We're also currently working with all of our social workers to identify patients as they come in and those that are already on service if they are veterans. And then after our call last week, we're trying to figure out how we're going to collect all the data that's needed. But we're doing certificates and recognizing all of our patients as veterans. And we've done several staff trainings as far as, you know, all the issues with the veterans and all that kind of stuff. We've done that. And I know Margo has gone out and talked. She's our education coordinator. She's talked with quite a few veterans organizations in our community. She just went last Saturday to some large meeting out in Nebraska, and I forget how many veterans organizations she said was there, but it was quite a large group. So we've got a lot of interest, and we have a veteran volunteer who is kind of our champion there. So things are going really well.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Sounds like it's been very busy in a number of areas. Great. Okay, and Jessica in Staples at Lakewood Health Center.
Hi, this is Jessica from Lakewood Health System. I have our palliative and hospice care teams here along with our medical director. Just talking a little bit about our current project is focusing on a palliative care to hospice care transition for veterans. We are working on quite a few things. April 4th, we'll be having end-of-life care with a portion of that being devoted to end-of-life veterans care for our Lakewood Health System staff from all different areas. We have an integrated health network, so we'll be reaching a lot of our internal staff. We are attending a We Honor Veterans training on March 29th, and on that same day, we'll also be having a community booth at one of our local Legions Club and reaching out to veterans to let them know about the grant and to give out some initial information about the VA and benefits that may be available. In April, we're hoping to make some contact with the CBOX and the area service coordinators and just gathering some information to present some education on what hospice and palliative care services we offer and the possibilities and really get feedback from them as far as what they feel are the local needs of our community. I think even from this presentation, we still are looking at and wondering about palliative care and how that all fits in even after today's presentation. So we're still working on that, and I guess we have quite a few more questions, but we'll continue looking into what the possibilities are.
Thank you, Jessica. And I know you have a site visit coming up with Cami in a couple weeks from the center, and we'll be doing a follow-up call with Caroline. So that will help address some of those questions, which I know are coming up with developing this new model of pain reimbursement for palliative care. So we talked about that with Caroline this morning, actually, on our project call.
Great. That sounds
so
great.
Keep track of those questions, and we'll be working on addressing them.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. And our fifth site, Health Connect at Home, and based in Grand Island, Nebraska. Dawn is attending the NHPCO conference mm-hmm. this week, so I think she was traveling today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you all for the updates. You know, this is nice when you can get into the work and the outreach and planning. It sounds like you're all doing lots of training, and I appreciate the planning for the outcomes measures, and we'll be here to help you with, as well as Hilda from Atlas, with this this first round as we're coming up to the end of March here, and to be sure to call on us as you're starting to develop the tracking mechanisms for the measures. Well, our next webinar is on May 14th. That will be on a Monday again, our educational conference call. And the topic is methods for building effective community partnerships. And we will have a community development consultant, Jim Creel, with us. And he's a very entertaining trainer, facilitator. He was formerly with the Blandon Foundation here in Minnesota. And also we'll do updates again. So thank you all.
This is Linda in Sioux City, and I just have to say I think this webinar today was excellent. I know I learned information, and I think for our hospice and palliative care staff, there's information that will be helpful to them. So I appreciate the fact that you recorded that and would want to share that with our staff. It was an excellent presentation.
Great. Thank you, Linda. And thank you again, Caroline, for sharing that with us.
My pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you all again in the future.
Good. Well,
right.
With that, I'll let you go a little early.
Hey.
You plenty to do.
Have
Thanks
a great day.
Have a great week. Bye.